Gig session number 10601, reel 2.
Mr. Cossier, reel 2. You were talking about the accommodation in the barrack room, and I think you got as far as I just mentioned that this would have to be cleaned as every morning. You were telling me about that.
Yes, well, on the stroke of 6, the Beaver Assembly Valley, and you more or less had to be out of bed before he finished the call. Now, your first task was to prepare your own bed for inspection. You know, you had to fold the blankets and the sheets perfectly for inspection. Then you had to polish around your own bed area. Polish it. And, of course, various people, soldiers in the barrack room, had various jobs. Like, some had to clean the windows, some had to clean the coal scuttle, some had to clean the fire out and prepare it ready for lighting. And my job was the toilets. I had to clean the toilets ready for inspection.
These were indoor toilets?
Indoor toilets, yes. Just adjacent to the barrack room. And the squad sergeant, Sergeant Dawson, who was a chap I admired very much, would come along about 7 o'clock and inspect the barrack room. Then you went down and got a pot of cocoa and a slice of bread and butter.
Before you tell me about the meals that you might have had, can I just ask you about the kit inspection that you mentioned in passing there? Mm-hmm. What form did the kit inspection take?
Well, the kit inspection was just your bed and your sheets, you know. Your bed was made up properly. That was all the kit inspection was at that particular moment.
Did you?
And, of course, the barrack room floor polished, the windows had to be clean, and the coal scuttle had to be polished. The fireplace had to be laid ready for lighting that evening. And the toilets, after having washed and shaved, had to be all polished, basins washed out, you know. And wasn't domestic, there was some of the disinfectant put down, ready for 7 o'clock, for when the squad sergeant arrived.
Did you have your full kit then?
Yes, we had our full kit.
You didn't have to lay it all out?
No, this is merely just because our kit was in our lockers. You see, and the squad sergeant would come in, stand to your beds, he would look at you first, because you had to be okay, dressed, your cot, the next one, the next cot, then you'd go to the windows, examine the windows, the coal scuttle, then you'd go to the toilets, examine the toilets. Now this was 7 o'clock. Then you went downstairs to the cookhouse and you got a pot of cocoa and a slice of bread and butter. This was prior to your breakfast, you see, because sometimes you went out on PT before breakfast, and the law was that you had to have something to eat or drink before your first parade, you see. You did about half an hour's PT, you came back in, changed into your denims, and by that time it was 8 o'clock. Then you got your breakfast. Cookhouse sounded again for breakfast.
Okay. How frequently did you have full kit inspections?
Well, you had a full kit inspection every 2 months, meaning you got 3 within the 6 months. But in the first 2 months, you got preliminary inspections just to get you on the right course as to what they wanted for your final inspection, you see?
What did they want?
Everything. Now then, your kit inspection, it's a marvellous thing to see. I used to have photographs of it. Every bit of kit you had was inspected. Even your spare pair of bootlaces. What they used to do was, you had a sheet of hardboard, and you laid that on your bed, covered neatly with a blanket. On that blanket had been no creases in. On that blanket, you had your other 2 blankets folded with your 2 sheets. Then it was stepped down. You had a shirt. It had to be folded just like the shirts you are folded when you buy them at the shop. creased, folded on cardboard. Your socks were folded, I think it was 2.5 inches or 2 inches square on cardboards, a pair of socks with your number, rank and name on. Your pullover had been neatly folded, just like your shirt on cardboard. Your spare pair of boot laces had to be rolled neat and tidy. Your PT kit, vest and pants, all square formation, and it covered the whole of your bed. In addition to that, at the head of your bed, your equipment, your webbing, that's your belt, your cross straps, your pouches, had to be blancoed, and your brasses, highly polished. Your grey coat hung by-side it, with the buttons highly polished. And of course, at the foot of your bed, you had your spare pair of boots, toe plates polished, studs polished, heel plates polished, and your white belt, white blancoed, and the buckle highly polished. Even your housewife, which is a small container containing thread and needles and thimble and spare buttons, had to be laid out in uniform fashion. Everything had to be in line. Now, everything on those beds had to be in line, corresponding with the bed next to you. So your socks, your shirt, had to be in line right the way up 15 beds. You had 15 beds each side, and you had to put a line on so that your shirt was in line with his shirt, and your socks was in line with his socks. And that was your kit inspection.
The actual formality of laying out the kit like that, was this told to you at the preliminary, the kit
inspection? Yes, as I said, the first 2 months they got preliminary because we didn't know what they wanted.
Did you have to remember where to put all these things, or was there something you could go to? Where
There was a photograph at the end of the barrack room, which we used to consult, you know, from previous inspection. There was a photograph. And looking at that photograph, you'd think it was utterly impossible to get things like that. But by God, you did.
How long did it take you to prepare for such an inspection?
Well, all night. You know, went to bed. You laid your kit, you start laying your kit maybe 10 o'clock the night before. And you lay on the floor all night. You got no sleep.
When was the inspection taken?
About 9 to 10 o'clock in the morning. Because following that inspection, you had to do a PT display in the gymnasium. Then you had to do a drill display on the barrack square. You see, apart from that, I mean, the inspection took like 3 phases. You had your kit inspection. You had your PT test, they called it. Then you had your drill test on the barrack square. So there was like 3 phases to the inspection.
What did the PT test consist of?
Well, jumping over the Bolton horse, parallel bars, club swinging, skipping, wall bars, you know, general Swedish PT, you know, what the kids get at school, sort of thing, you know, the ordinary Swedish drill.
You say Swedish drill, well, what do you mean by that exactly?
Well, you know, you swing your arms above your head, and, you know, and sit on the floor and touching your toes, things like that. You know.
I see. How often were these three types of inspection held?
3 times in the 6 months, every 2 months. And, of course, at the end of each test, as we called it, the chap who was best at PT would be given a cloth badge to pin onto his PT vest, you see, like a prefect. And the chap who had the best kit got a rosette to put onto his locker. And the man who did the best drill, best turnout, got a silver cane. Now, this was an ordinary walking out cane, with the exception that it had a silver tip and a silver mount and a silver band with your number, rank and name on. He got that for the best drill and the best turnout.
Did you receive any of these awards?
Yes. I received it 3 times in succession.
For which aspect of the inspection was that?
For the drill. For the best drill and best turnout.
How were these awards made? Was there a formality to that as well?
Yes. In particular to the drill cane, the walking out cane, the squad formed up on the barrack square with your squad sergeant, squad corporals, company sergeant major, regimental sergeant major, adjutant, and the commanding officer. And of course you had members of the public, like mothers, friends, sweethearts, sitting on chairs around the side, accompanied by the band, playing the appropriate tunes. If you're doing the slow march, this test, you see, it encountered everything. The slow march, quick march, drill, it encountered everything, you see. All drill movements, even the funeral drill, it encountered all movements of military drill. And you had to go through your pierces.
And this award was made every 2 months with this sort of formality. How frequently had you won this award then? Did you win it more than once?
Yes, three times. Those who won it was up three times, you see. And those who got it the third time kept it. Well, I got it the third time. I kept it. But when we departed to join our parent regiment at Woking, I didn't really appreciate or know that it was my property. And I gave it to Sergeant Dowson, my squad sergeant. And I very much regret it. I don't know what happened to it.
Can I ask you, was there any competition between squads in this sort of development of expertise?
No, the only inter-competition among squads was boxing. Boxing. Inter-squad boxing.
Well, perhaps we could actually look at that later on. One thing that you've mentioned in passing was food. What was the quality of the food like?
Very good. And strange though it may seem, at that particular time, very well cooked. I had no complaints about the food. Plenty of it, well cooked. And I was never hungry.
Would you say it was better than you'd experienced when you'd been a miner?
Oh, yes, very much. Very much. Yes.
Perhaps we can turn now to your reactions to life in the army. How did you get on with the army discipline?
Well, I accepted army discipline. I accepted it like a duck to water. To me, it was no problem. The sergeant major, wasn't the sergeant major, but the squad sergeant, bawling and shouting his head off, just didn't worry me one little bit. It was very vigorating. As I say, I couldn't see any fault in it. I couldn't fault it. There was occasions when, at night time, I would hear some of the squad members crying in their beds, sniffling and crying on, homesick, I suppose. But to me, I was never homesick. I never seemed to be short of money. And I was never harassed in any way. And to me, it just was great. Plenty of fresh air, good exercise. I had no complaints at all.
What would you say that you said some people were homesick. Did that affect, you think, the squad in any way? Was there a lot of people who were...
No, it never affected the squad in the way of turnout or drill or discipline. It never affected the squad. At least I never noticed it at any time. I can't recollect if it had any bearing on our drill and turnout or discipline. It was something personal which they preferred to hide, keep quiet about. They didn't want people to know they were homesick, you know.
Did you ever feel that the lack of privacy that was sort of characteristic of the army lifestyle was at all daunting for you?
Well, it never affected me somehow or other. Privacy. I don't know why, but I didn't feel I'd been deprived of any privacy. I just didn't feel it. I just didn't realise it if I was.
This perhaps something to do with your own family upbringing?
Yes, I suppose so.
There's a large number of people living in the house.
Yes.
Okay, can we turn now to some aspects of your training? You've described the basic drill that you had to go in, the PT. Did you have any weapons training at Fenham?
Yes, we had grenades, dummy grenades, of course, 3 second, 7 second fuse, you know, pull the pin, count seven or three, whatever the case was, before you throw the grenade.
Where was that actually done? Was that done in the Barrack Square, or was there a specific...
No, that was a waste ground. The town moor, actually, just outside the barracks, Hunter's Moor. It was just the idea of pulling the pin and throwing the grenade. You got no results because they were all dummies. We got brain gun practice. Again, we never fired any live ammunition. It was all drill, like change barrel, number one takeover, you know. Run forward, dismantle, remounting, you know, no live ammunition involved.
How many people were at the Bren gun?
Two, number one, number two. And, of course, with the two-inch mortar, again, just a dry run, you know, pretending. Then, of course, we had rifle range, 2-2, on the 2-2 range. That was rather interesting because you got results of what you'd been taught on the Barrack Square. Because on the Barrack Square, when you were taught to aim, what actually happened was the instructor lay on his tummy, the same as you, at the other end of the rifle, looking through a small aperture, and he could see if you were taking properly aim, because he was looking at your pupil. He was looking along the foresight, the back sight, and your pupil, and he could see through a small aperture if you were taking aim properly and testing your steadiness. You see? Now, this in turn served its purpose when you got to the 2-2 range, which was at Fenham Barracks. And as a matter of fact, I was quite good in the 2-2 range.
Do you remember what sort of shot you were?
Pretty average, you know, pretty average. But a chap there called Sergeant Walker, who was the armoury sergeant, and he's always singing me praises, you know, giving me encouragement. And as it turned out, when I went on to Bisley range later on, I became a first class shot. So my Fenham Barrack training served me good deed.
When you mentioned earlier on that you worked with the Bren gun, did you have to learn how to strip the Bren gun down?
Oh yes, you had to cleaning purposes, regulate the Bren gun. You see, for slow fire, rapid fire, changing the gas chamber, clean the barrel, barrel getting too hot, change barrels, you know.
So the Bren gun had a spare barrel with it as part of the equipment?
Yes, number two had a spare barrel. You see, the instructor would say, right, so many rounds fired, change barrel. You change the barrel, you know. You do everything except use live ammunition, though, aim the targets.
Well, at that point, would you be aware of any difficulties in using the weapon in particular?
Yes, you would be. The only thing you didn't realise was if you would hit the target or not. I mean, because you weren't firing anything. But as for running forward, you know, taking up the correct position, lining your sights, regulating your gas chamber, and changing barrels, things like that.
You say regulating the gas chamber. What purpose did that have?
Well, for slow speed and fast speed, it's like a sort of a regulator on the side which allowed the gases from the cartridge to escape faster, which gave you a lower rate of fire. But this was never adhered to much in action. You just fired the gun, that was it. I mean, this was all Barrack Square stuff. But later on, actually, didn't bother a great deal about the gas chamber.
What about a 2-inch mortar as a weapon? What did you learn about that?
Well, all we could learn about was just position ourselves, you know, make sure that when you slid the bomb into the barrel, that your hands continued down, because since ever you leapt out and went, and if your hands was allowed to linger at the entrance of the barrel, then you're allowed to get burnt or your hands blown off. You know, that was the main thing. And judging distance, you see, maybe 200 yards, 300 yards, you know, judging distance.
How many men were in the mortar team?
Well, there was two of us. I think later on there was three to carry the ammunition. But at Fenham, there's just two of us. I never had nothing to do with doing mortars during the war.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned cleaning the Bren gun barrel and the rifle barrel. What procedures did you go through for cleaning?
Well, it fed him. It was just use your pull through. In the bottom of your rifle, you had what you call a pull through. It was a cord about a yard long. And on one end, there was a brass weight. And on the other end, there was a loop. Now, in that loop, you put what you call a piece of 2x2, a flannelette. You see? Then after you fired your rifle, you dropped the brass weight down the barrel. It came out the breech. And you pulled the 2x2 through, which cleaned your barrel. But if you fired quite a lot, we say like on Bisley, on the ranges, then your barrel had to be boiled. You had a funnel, and you had a set pots on the range with water boiling all the time. And after you fired your course, you went there and you got a jug and you got the hot water out of the set pot. You see, you put the funnel in your rifle and you poured the water down to bring the barrel to the same temperature as it was when you were firing live ammunition. Then you pulled it through, you see, to clean it with your 4x2. And of course, you kept doing that until your barrel was shiny, clean.
When you were working on, with the Bren gun, of course you hadn't fired it at Fenham, did you have to simulate the cleaning?
Yes, you simulate that. Well, with the Bren gun, you had a rod with a handle on. You didn't use a pull-through as such. You had a long rod, about a yard long, like an enlarged darning needle with an eyelet and a swivel handle. And you put your 4x2 or 2x2, whatever it was, through that loop and you just pumped it up and down like that with a barrel. You didn't use it normally. You could, but you didn't.
Do you use any oil on the...
Yes. After you cleaned it, you slightly oil it. Just slightly oil it. Because it's starting to sweat. You see, with the heat, because you cool down, starting to sweat. So you get oil it, stuff from rusting.
Okay. Was there any special training that you had, apart from that which you've already described while you were at Fenham? Were you given any other specific training?
No, there's just the PT, the drill, and of course the weapon training. You know. No, there's no specific training.
Did you go any route marches or anything like that?
No, not at Fenham Barracks you didn't, just cross-country runs. Ammunition boots, socks, PT shorts and vest, and we came up and ran around to Fenham, Nuns Moor. That's the only, we didn't do any route marching.
What about recreation in the barracks itself? You mentioned the NAFI. Was there any other way of passing time?
No, there's just a reading room, the NAFI. Chaps used to go there, you could have your beer, teas and wads, that was, or chars and wads as known, that was tea and rock buns, Kit Kat, you know the chocolate you get now. You could get bits of meat like bacon sandwiches and that, but dartboard, there wasn't even any billiards. Not in the NAFI, not in Fenham.
And you said there was a reading room?
Reading room.
What sort of things were available to read? Was it?
Well, I remember there was the Listener, the Posh magazine, and the Daily Papers. That was about all. Nothing appertained to military, which you would have expected. It was just an ordinary, you know.
And this was a place also where you could perhaps write home and things like
yes,
that?
Yes, you could write home. There was racks there with stationery, with a paper with a Daily crest on. You know, free, just for the taking, the deal I crest on.
Had you kept in touch now with your parents, and had you actually...
Yes, I've kept in touch with them. After the first 3 or 4 weeks, I took weekend pass, leave. This, you're allowed out after midday Saturday, until midnight Sunday. Midday Saturday and midnight Sunday, you're allowed out, providing you weren't required for church parade on Sunday morning, providing you weren't required for for fatigues, sport bashing on Sunday. That was left to the discretion of the squad sergeant. He authorised you to make out a pass, you made your pass out, and the company commander signed it, privileged you to go, to travel. Again, that was an ordeal, because when you went at 12 o'clock to go out, again, you come in contact with the regiment and police at the gate. And it was a bit of an ordeal, they had a huge mirror there, and you stand in front of the mirror to see if you're all right before you went in to check your dress. And these guys could be very awkward at times. They'd send you back, and least bit thing, and you got tired. Only one occasion I was sent back. My chin strap was on the wrong way around. Of course, with me having the silver cane, it did a lot of things for me. You know, it opened a few doors, as you might say. Because when they saw the silver cane, they realised then that I was more or less a perfectionist. You know, they didn't take the mickey out of it. So off you go. Okay, you know.
Well, you mentioned the silver cane. I'd like to come back to that in a moment. To return to your parents, you went on this leave to your parents. So had they sort of reconciled themselves to the fact that you left? Was there any
acrimony there? There was no bitterness. And I think when they saw the change in me, because I was much filler out, and more alert, more starry-eyed, as you might say, some of the people didn't recognise me hardly. I changed so different. And now I can quite understand why the squad sergeant didn't permit us to have our photos taken, because every Saturday the photographer would come to the barrack square to take our photographs, you know, just willy-nilly. It's a lark. And our squad sergeant wouldn't permit us to have our photographs taken in uniform until we've done 4 months. By that time, you see, you start looking like soldiers. And I can understand now, because when I went home on leave, people were amazed at my appearance, my behaviour. You know, it's remarkable. And I think my parents appreciate that I'd done the right thing.
You say your behaviour had changed. In what way?
Well, I suppose when I was at home, I used to go down to the institute and skylark on with the rest of the teenagers, as possible to do now, playing billiards in the institute, skylarking on, you know, up to all various bits of development, tantalising the caretaker, you know, things like that. That all finished. When I went down to play billiards, I more or less played by numbers, like you would do in the army sort of thing. You know, you conducted yourself in a different manner. You didn't lounge about, you lie about the seats and things like that. You know, you stood erect or you sat erect.